supposed to be turning this on. I had my finger on it, and then I got, I was easily absorbed. But anyway, in James 1, 13 through 15, we do see that the source of that God is not responsible for sin. But as we, and then in 1 John 3, 8, we do find that Satan is the one who originated sin. And so we want to go back to Ezekiel. First place we'll go is to Ezekiel 28. And as we come into this context, he addresses one, he says, speaking to the king of Tyre, but actually he's not just speaking to the king of Tyre. What he says goes beyond the king of Tyre, and it goes back into the background of beyond the one who's behind the king of Tyre. And so it's not just a man here, and you see this. The description here goes beyond any man, and it goes back to someone who was around back when there was an Eden, the Garden of God, but it was a different garden. It was the Garden of Eden, but at that time it was a rock garden and a mineral garden in verse 13. But what I want to look at in particular, we'll look at verse 15, and it says, "Thou wast perfect." The word perfect here is he was all that a man could be, essentially. And so this little word, this word tamim, it has the idea he was all that a man could be in thy ways. And that, not a man here, but for a man it's used of men, it's all that a man could be. But here was all that a spirit being could be in all his ways, looking at his lifestyle. But he was perfect. And he says, "You were perfect in your ways from the day that thou was created." Now you notice that he was created. And when God created, he created everything that was, and it was good. Now before the, I believe this took place early on, before the recreation in Genesis 1, but you had spirit beings created, and they were already there. And actually, we could go back when God created the heavens and the earth. I need to go back beyond that. In Job 38, you do find that the sons of God shouted for joy when the starry spaces were created. And so he was created before that, before the creation of the universe, we could say. And so he was created, though. But he was perfect. But notice, he was perfect up to a point of time, till crookedness. This word iniquity here, it's a word ul, it has the idea of crookedness, dishonesty was found in thee. And so this created being, a perfect creature, he was perfect up until there was crookedness found in him. But then it moves on from this thing that was an unrighteousness within him. This crookedness was, "By the multitude of thy merchandise, they have filled the midst of thee with violence." And so now he has done something. He moves into activity here, "And thou hast sinned." And so he sinned. He acted. He sinned. And therefore, God says, "I will cast thee as disgraced out from the mountain of God." Now, the mountain of God, the word mountain has the idea of government. It looks at God's government. And so, as you see, it's the mountain of God, though he was cast out, he was disgraced out from the mountain, out from the government of God. "And I will destroy thee, O overshadowing." The word covering here has the idea of overshadowing cherub. And so we'll go back and pick up the context a little bit in a moment, just to look at some of the things about Satan in this context. You can see that down back in verse 14, that he was the anointed cherub, and he was above the rest of the spirit beings, but he was the cherub that covereth, and so he was the overshadowing cherub. He was the one who overshadowed. And so he was, we notice before he was kept to be cast out of the mountain of God, you see, "And God said, I have set thee so, thou wast upon the holy mountain of God." And so he was up there. He was up in the holy mountain of God. He was there where God had his government, and from where God ruled over the spirit beings who were created. And so he walked, but then he was there. But then he says, "I walked has walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire, but he was in that location. But God is going to deal with Satan because of his sin. Now, he did sin, and I'm just going to see how far I want to go in this context. I'll point out a couple of other things here before I leave this context. If you look at verse 12, at the end of the verse, he says, "Thou sealest up the sum," and the way he seals it up, he's full of wisdom and perfect in beauty, a different term, but he's perfect in beauty. Now, he was beautiful, so over in verse 17, he says, "Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty, and so thou hast corrupted thy wisdom." So you see, he was perfect in wisdom, but he was beautiful, but because of that, thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. And so we see that Satan did, as a cherub, he was bright. He had a brightness to him. But he said, "I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings that they may behold thee." That's something that will take place in the future, I believe, for Satan. But it goes on, "Thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries by the multitude of thy perversities." The word iniquity here, when has the idea of perversities. It's the closest thing in the Hebrew to a sin nature. And so he says, "By the multitude of thy perversities, by the perversity of thy traffic, therefore will I bring forth a fire from the midst of thee, and it shall devour thee, and I will bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that beheld thee." And so he's anticipating the judgment upon Satan in the future. But you see, we find here that Satan began, sin started when Satan, he sinned from a beginning. And it says that he sinned from a beginning. Well, the beginning comes back here to Ezekiel 28 and verse 16, where it says he sinned. And he sinned because he was beautiful. And it was something that I think you see a description of his pride here. He was lifted up because of his beauty. And so he did corrupt him, his wisdom that he had as a created being. Now we have another explanation of Satan's fall in Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah chapter 14. And so these two chapters are chapters that we see very clearly as Satan's involvement in the beginning of, in the origination of sin. So in Isaiah chapter 14, we'll pick up in verse 12, where it begins to describe the fall of Satan from heavens, it says. And this is something that will take place, that will be seen in the future. But he says, "How art thou fallen from heavens?" Now, I will slide in here. We're not dealing with Satanology, but we are looking at the origin of sin. But if you look at Satan here, he says, "You've fallen from heavens." And yet when we go to Job, chapters 1 and 2, there was a day when the sons of God came in before God, and Satan was there in their midst. So he did have access to the third heaven yet. But he will be cast down. And that's why I say it's anticipating the future. But he expresses that he has fallen from heavens. O Lucifer, and Lucifer just means day star. O day star, son of the breaking of the dawn, the son of the morning, and looks at the breaking of the dawn. How art thou cut down? How art thou cut down? And so somebody else cut him down. It's a passive concept here. How art thou cut down to the ground? Which is weakening, we could say, which is weakening the nations. And so he's weakening the nations, for thou hast said in thine heart. Now you notice here, Satan speaks something. Where does he speak it? He speaks it in his heart. And so it's in his inner man. And so it's in the inner man, within his, where you have his rational being, his emotional being, his volitional being, the I, the ego. He says that within his heart. And so as a spirit being, he does have, he can reason, and with him, he is a spirit being, but he's mostly reasoning. It's mostly reasoning, not so much the emotion that we would have. But he does have reason and volition. But when he said this in his heart, this is a place where we would say that he committed a trespass. And so by that trespass, I believe this would be when he actually fell in his spiritual fall. And then he sinned, and he brought upon himself judgment. But he said, I will, notice how what he said in his heart, though. I will ascend into the heavens. And it is a plural here, and I believe you should read it plural here. And I will ascend into the heavens. I will exalt my throne. Now, where is he going to ascend into the heavens? I didn't read the next verse. I skipped one verse in Ezekiel 28, but I skipped the one that describes where he was in verse 13. It says, "Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering, and it was something that overshadowed him. The sardius, topaz, and the diamond, and the beryl, and the onyx, and the jasper, and the sapphire, and the emerald, and the carbuncle, and the gold. The workmanship of thy tablets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created." But here we find him now. He is on a place that's in a place, and so at this stage, at the beginning here, he is seen to be in Eden, the garden of God. But notice back over here, he says, "I will ascend into the heavens. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God." Out there in the second heaven, in the starry spaces, he's going to exalt his throne. And so he had a throne here upon the earth. He still has a throne that he moves around. In Revelation, we see he has a throne. I believe it was in, I want to say Thyatira, but I think it was Sardis. I won't go back and look at it, but he did have a throne, and he wants to. He says, "I'm going to exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation, or mount of meeting." And so the mount again is used of God's government. And so he's going to sit upon the side of the mount of congregation. He's going to be sitting up there where God's government is located. And he's going to be there on the mount of the meeting in the sides of the north. And he's going to be out there in the sides or into the uttermost part of the north. That's something that tells us where heaven is, the third heaven. It's out in the north. And that's where God's residency is. The Father's residency is there in the third heaven. That's where the Son is at his right hand today. But it's in the mount, but it's in the sides of the north. And so he's going to be up there, and he's going to put his throne right up there where God's throne is, right up where God's government is, in the center of God's government. But then notice he says, "I will ascend above the heights of the clouds," and that's probably the Shekinah glory clouds here, not just the clouds of earth, "but I will be like the Most High." Now when he says, "I'm going to be like the Most High," he says he's going to be like God. But he's not going to be like God moral being and in his abilities necessarily. He's not saying that he's going to be like the character of God, but he's going to be like the Most High. And I think the context says that he's going to be like God in government, in his rule, as one who is over things. Now, God is the sovereign of the universe. He's the creator of the universe, but he's also the sovereign ruler of the universe. And he's going to be like the Most High. Now, the Most High, he is the Most High in the realm of his rule as well as in every other aspect. But he is the Most High, and Satan, I think you see here, says he's going to be like him in that sense. Yeah.
So in other words, you're saying that he wanted to be like God only in the sense he wasn't going to answer to anybody.
Yeah, he was sovereign. He would be the ruler.
Yeah, he wouldn't answer to anybody.
Yeah, he would be just like God in that respect. And so he wouldn't have to respond to anybody. Nobody would tell him what to do.
Who would he rule?
Spirit beings. So it's just other spirit beings. Now, when he fell, we find that he did take some have some authority, and we'll notice that in a moment or two. I don't know how many moments, but maybe more than two. But anyway, he says, yet thou shalt be brought down to Sheol, to the sides of the abyss. The word, the pit, the abyss, actually. And so he's going to be brought down. God will judge him again. But you do see, we do find two passages here that are pretty descriptive of Satan's fall. And, yeah, we'll get there pretty quickly. Now, when we consider his fall, I want to go back to the book of Revelation. We will take that in your notes. It's there, back to Revelation chapter 12. And in Revelation chapter 12, we do find a description of the of Satan's activity when he did fall. And we will connect this back to Genesis in a little bit. But as you come into chapter 12, we're just going to pick up in verse 3, the red dragon. And we're going to see who the red dragon is, but we want to see what the red dragon does. Now, you have this, I'll just pick it up, and there appeared another sign miracle. It's the same ion, the wonder here, in the heaven. And behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns. Now, you can go back to Daniel 7, and you can find 10. These are representatives of kings and the 7 crowns upon his head. And so, but this red dragon, who's the red dragon? You go over to verse 9, and it says, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan. And so he deceives the whole world and so on. But that's the red dragon. And so you find him spoken of again down in verse 13. We'll see him also back up in verse 7. But I want to focus now on verse 4. And we see what happened when he, at the time when he fell, he did something. He was going to be like the Most High. Well, he did rule over those who were spirit beings. And so at this time, we find there were spirit beings and that were created. Now, and his tail grew, the red dragon's tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. Now, we know that these were not the heavenly bodies. We take this literally, but we don't take it literally, because these stars are representative of beings. And so it says he did cast them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman, Israel, which was ready to be delivered for to devour her child when he was about to be born. And so as you go on over to verse 7, though, gives you a hint as to what the stars were. Now, we see a battle going on in heaven, and this it's more than a battle. This is a campaign, the war here. It describes a military campaign, and there was a campaign in heaven. You have Michael on the one side and his angels, and they fought against the dragon. And so you have the dragon and his angels who were fighting on the other side. And so the dragon fought and his angels. And so this war in heaven is going on. But now where did the dragon get his angels from? Where did he get the angels? Well, these would be the representatives, the third of the angels. The third of the stars would represent the angels here who are his angels. He was able to solicit these angels and they bought his merchandise back there. I didn't mention that when we looked at it, but he was trafficking. He had merchandise. He sold them a bill of goods back in Ezekiel 28, and that was probably around verse 17 or in there. You see where he did his merchandising, and he really sold them a bill of goods, and they bought it. And so there would be a third of the spirit beings who, again, God created them well. Created them good, you could say. He doesn't reference that there, but they were created, and they were good. But then when Satan was tempted, and when he gave in, and there was a crookedness found in him, that brought it down to where he was responsible for his trafficking, for bringing others after him, but he sinned. And that's back in verse 18 where his trafficking was seen, and and his solicitation, it would be implied there to the other spirit beings, who were the only beings that he could do that to when he did sin. And so you have now Satan with a third of the angels. Now back to 1 John 3:8, he was one who sinned from a beginning. And so he did sin. We don't need to turn back there, but I just want to go back there. This is where we started. Where did sin originate? It originated with Satan. And so we see that he did sin. His sin was that he was lifted up with pride, no doubt, because of his beauty, and he was going to be like the Most High. And that's where we find him there. Now, when he was going to go up above the stars of the heaven, I alluded back to Job 38. And since I did put it in your notes, we'll go back to Job 38 for just a moment and look at verses 5 through 7. Job 38, verses 5 through 7. The Lord said some interesting things to Job out of the whirlwind in this context, but I'm just going to, he asked him where he was when the foundations of the earth were laid and so forth, and if you have any understanding, and who hath laid the measure thereof and so on. But when we want to look at verses 6 and 7 where it says, whereupon are the foundations, the foundations or the sockets, the foundations thereof fastened, or who laid the cornerstone thereof? When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. And so when the morning stars sang together, when the morning stars were created in the creation, you had some sons of God. And the sons of God are represent spirit beings. They are spirit beings in the Old Testament. And so these spirit beings, they were there, and when starry spaces were created, you find them shouting for joy. All the sons of God shouted for joy. Now a third of those were drawn down by the great dragon, the old serpent, the devil, as they were drugged down with him, and they became those who spirit beings who followed him, who later became demons. Now, God was not responsible for sin, but Satan was. And so when sin begins with mankind, when it enters the human race, who's responsible? Well, the human beings are, but how did the solicitation to do so happen with human beings? We have to go back to Genesis and to Genesis chapter 3. And as we come back to Genesis chapter 3, we find the initial temptation to unrighteousness by Satan when he tempted Eve. And Satan, he was very wise. Back in Ezekiel 28, we did see that he was wise, but his wisdom was corrupted. It was polluted by his when crookedness was found in him. But yet he was still very wise, and so he was still smarter than we. And this doesn't have to do with hamartiology so much, but back in the book of Jude, even Michael the archangel, when contending with Satan, didn't have the power over Satan. He had to say, "The Lord rebuke thee, and not I can rebuke thee, and I rebuke thee." Couldn't do it in his own power, even the highest angel. And so in the ranking of angels, Satan is still powerful, the most powerful, and so the highest angel couldn't do anything. But he's still wise, and he's still tricky. And that's what we see in this as we come to chapter 3 of Genesis. Now you have the account in Genesis 3 as to what took place. And you have the initial temptation, though, in verses 3 through 6. But we'll come back. I'll pick it up here and just refer back to it in a little bit. But let's go ahead and begin in verse 1. Now the serpent, and the word serpent here, we wouldn't know who this serpent was without Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9, where we saw the serpent. And so the red dragon, the serpent, the devil, Satan is the serpent here. Now he's behind the serpent. There was a serpent, but the serpent was a beautiful creature, and we see that. But he was more subtle than any beast of the field. Now he's looking at the serpent, but behind the serpent is Satan. Satan is using the serpent. But he says he was more subtle. The idea of subtle here, he was crafty. And so he was filled with crookedness. He was crook. He was dishonest, but he was crafty. And so he was more crafty than any of the beasts of the field which Jehovah Elohim had made. And so he said unto the woman, "Yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat from every tree of the garden?" And so he says, what he says is mostly true, just a little twist on it. Did God say, you shall not eat from every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto him, the serpent, "We may eat from the fruit of the trees of the garden." So she agrees, yes, we can. But, now notice the but. "But from the tree, the fruit of the tree, which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat from it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die." And when you come through here, let's go over and see what it says, what God said over in verse 17 of chapter 2. "But from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil," and the good and evil, again, this is going to be the tree of good that would make you happy, evil, calamity, "thou shalt not eat from it, neither shalt thou touch." Oh, no, he didn't say that, did he? He didn't say that. He doesn't say, "neither shall you touch it." God told Adam that you were not to eat from it. But over here, Eve says, "you're not to eat from it, neither touch it." Now, I'm supposing that Adam added that to what the Lord told him. He told him, don't even touch it. Don't eat from it, don't even touch it. And so that'd be good advice. Don't even touch it. If you're not to eat from it, don't even begin to think about touching it, lest you die. Now, he didn't have a clue, and Eve didn't have a clue what it meant to die, and I don't believe Satan really understood what would happen to mankind when God said back over in chapter 2 when he spoke to Adam and said, "For in the day that thou eatest therefrom," and when it says, "thou shalt surely die," really it's, we'll retranslate it, it says, "dying thou shalt die." Dying, thou shalt die. You're going to die in one sense, and you're going to die in another sense. There are going to be two kinds of death in the day that you eat from that tree. And so that's the setup and that's the only rule. This is the only rule given to Adam. No other rules given, just "thou shalt not eat from this tree, of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil." One rule. One line that God put down, and so we'll just say, we look at transgression, God put a line in the sand, so to speak. You don't eat from this tree. You don't step across that line. And that was something that they were not to do. And so Eve answers right, and she adds something to it, probably from Adam. "You don't even touch it, lest you die." Now, as we come to verse 4, we're going to see that Satan, we see how crafty he is. And he said, "And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die." Dying, you won't die. Well, see, he twists the truth. He twists what God said. And so he did it by craftiness. And so dying, you won't die. And he's going to explain why. "For God doth know." And so it's like God's kind of withholding something from you. God knows that in the day that you eat therefrom, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as Elohim. It's not God with a small g and an s on it. It is, this would be, you're going to be like God. And the way you'll be like God is you will know good and evil. And that's just what God said. He was partially true in what he said, but he twisted it just enough. But he says that you would know good and evil. So they weren't to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Satan just says, you'll be like God, though. You'll know good. That would make you happy. And you'll know evil, calamity, things that will happen to you. They'd never experienced that before. They never had heard of such a thing, except God said this is what would happen. And so that's where Satan tempts Eve. And so this was a solicitation to evil, very much so. Now we do come down to Eve succumbing to the temptation as we move on to the next verse, into verse 6. "And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food," he got to her with food, "and so, and that it was pleasant and the idea of pleasant, that it was a desirable thing, desire to the eyes, something that will look good, and a tree to be desired to make one prudent, probably would be better than wise here. She would gain some knowledge anyway. It's not really the word wisdom, but she'd be prudent. She would gain some knowledge. She took from the fruit thereof and did eat. And so there was the solicitation to Eve, and this is where Eve succumbed to the temptation. And then we come to Adam, and gave also unto her husband. Now, and so she gave unto her husband with her. But if you remember, over in 2:17, we referred to it. And there we see the Lord God, Jehovah Elohim, said to Adam that you are not to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Adam had to pass that word on to Eve so that she knew that you were not to eat from that tree of good, the knowledge of good and evil. And also that if you weren't, don't even touch it, because if you don't touch it, you won't eat it. And otherwise you'll die. And so that was the setup there. And so she gave it to her husband. Now, you know, Adam comes to a place now where he has to determine what to do. Now, Eve was kind of tricked into this by Satan. He was crafty, very crafty, and he solicited her to evil. And so he did work with the twisting things around, made it sound good, made it sound like God was withholding something from them, really. And it sounded good, and she was deceived, we're going to see. And so she was not only deceived, she was thoroughly deceived. But Adam, was Adam deceived? Adam knew. God had told him, and he had to have told Eve. And even added to what he told Eve. And so he knew better. Now, I'm just going to add something in here. With the fall of man, there were some things that took place, and we'll notice some of these down in the context. But you see Adam's fall here, and he did eat. Now, I think he ate not just because he wanted to partake of the fruit, but I think he knew something had changed with Eve. And when we look at the next verse, and the eyes of them both were opened. And that's something that Satan had said, that their eyes would be opened. And they knew. Now, they did gain some knowledge, but not what they had hoped to learn. It wasn't anything good. And they knew that they were both, that both had become stripped. And when it says that they were naked, it actually is a little different form of the word for naked, which we find back up in 2:25, where Moses looks at them, and he says they were both naked, the man and his wife. So Adam and his wife were both naked, and they were not ashamed. He didn't, but that's from his viewpoint. He saw it that way. But when you come down to to verse 7 here, we find that they were stripped of something. And so when their eyes were opened, they knew that they had become stripped. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons, or things that were wrapped around them. And so we see that something happened to them as a result of the fall. They were stripped of something. And down in verse 10, we come back to this idea again, when Jehovah comes walking in the garden in the breeze of the day, and he speaks to them and says, "Where art thou?" Two things I want to say. Apparently, Jehovah did this more than once. He this was a common thing for him to do. And he did this up until this time with the fall. And so he came, and they weren't startled by it or anything. And he knows where they are. And this would be the pre-incarnate Son of God walking in the garden. And he would have walked in the garden in a humanoid form, because he walked. He was walking in the garden. But it says, and he said, I heard thy voice in the garden, Adam responds to, "Where art thou?" And he said, "I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid." And so now this is the first time he's been afraid. But he's afraid, why? Because I became stripped. Not that I was just naked, but I became stripped, and I hid myself. And so he was stripped. He lost something with the fall. Now, I don't have time to go through all of that. I did a forum paper one time on the garment of light, or just on light, and covered the garment of light. And I believe here we find that they were stripped of something, and they were in the likeness of God and the image of God. They lost something. They lost the image of God. They're still in the likeness of God. We can see that back in James, but here they were stripped. And I believe they lost a covering that they had, and it was quite evident, so that now they tried to cover themselves with something. So they wrapped leaves around them to cover themselves. And so they actually had been stripped of something, so now they were naked in that they had been stripped, and they'd become stripped. And so it had an effect upon them. This was an immediate effect. They were stripped, and now they're afraid in verse 10. Now, as we move on down in the context, and we move on and we're down to... B, C, point C, small d, to the passing of the buck. And this is where it all begins, the passing of the buck in 11 through 13. And so it begins with the passing of the buck when Adam blames Eve. And so Adam said, "The woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me up from the tree, and I did eat." Now, so he's blaming Eve for it. Now, did he know better? Yeah, he knew better. Who's responsible? Eve? Well, we'll see who God says is responsible. We know it wasn't Eve, because the fall of the race began and it was attributed by God to Adam and not to Eve. But anyway, she did partake, and she fell. Now, the one thing we could say about Eve is, I think you could say that she trespassed first. It became Satan attempted her. He deceived her. And so he's very crafty, and he tricks her. And so she does. So she says, well, it looks good. And she saw that it was good for food. And it was good for food. So that was her trespass. And it looked good. So she could reach out and partake of it and eat it. And so she, at the moment she said she could do that, I believe that's when Eve fell, and that's when she would have been stripped, because she trespassed, and she offended God by the trespass. She made up in her mind, she gave it a place, and she said, I can do this, and then she proceeded to do it. Now, God didn't call it sin, but she did trespass, and we'll see what else she did in a little bit. As she did step across the line. But Adam blames Eve for it. And so then the next thing in verse 13, and Jehovah Elohim said unto the woman, what is this that thou hast done? And the woman said, the serpent beguiled me. And so he tricked her, he deceived her, and I did eat. Well, that was true. The serpent did deceive her. And Jehovah Elohim said unto the serpent, because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go. And so upon the snake there was a curse, but behind the snake was that old serpent, the devil, that we saw in Revelation 12. And so he said, but the serpent itself was no longer a beautiful creature. Interestingly, when the serpent came and spoke to Eve, I don't know if many women today who would stand around and listen, they'd be screaming and running or trying to stomp, trying to whack it or something. They would be terrified. But Eve was. This was not an unusual thing, and so the serpent was not a scary creature. And I don't like some snakes either. And so we were just looking last night, yesterday, talking about carrying snake loads in your gun when you're out fishing in snake country. We don't like rattlesnakes, and there are other snakes that we don't like. But anyway, the snake was cursed. And so he's going to be upon the dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. Now you have a continuation here and you have judgment now. And so the judgment of the responsible parties and the effects upon the pass on down through the race are seen. And so, but with Satan, you have the judgment of the serpent in verse 14 and in verse 15. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. And that's the case. Just like I said, people don't like snakes, and snakes don't like, and I don't know what snakes think of women, but there's enmity between them, he says. But it's going to a singular seed here. And so it's not all human race here. But he says, between thy seed and her seed. Now it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. And so you see that the serpent is going to bruise, his head is going to be bruised by the seed of the woman, but while it happens, his heel will be bruised as well. And so you have this, and I believe here you do have a reference to the seed of the woman. And so from here on, they look for the seed of the woman. And so you do look for the seed of the woman, and the seed of the woman comes in Galatians 4:4. You do have the seed of the woman, and the Lord Jesus Christ is the seed of the woman. And he did crush Satan's head. He did take care of him on the cross, and he was wounded as he was hung upon, as Satan did bruise his heel as he was taken to the cross, I believe you could say. But here you have an anticipation, but this is just the seed of the woman, and you trace the seed of the woman. But this is not the first gospel. There's some in the Reformed camp who will refer to this as the proto-evangel, the first account of the gospel, but it isn't the first account of the gospel. But it does deal with the curse that was put upon the woman and upon her seed, upon the seed of Satan and the seed of the woman. It is the Satan and the seed. Now it goes on to the woman and the results of the fall upon the woman. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrows. And the word sorrow here is a word for pain. And it's going to be pain. It's going to be, and thy conception. And so it's going to increase pain that she's going to have, and she'll bear children. And so it goes on in pain. Thou shalt bring forth children, and thy, probably sons, and thy desire shall be to thy husband. And so she's going to be subject to her husband, and he shall rule over thee. Now before this, Adam and Eve were equal. There's no indication. She was a counterpart to Adam. But now he is going to be over the head over her. And now you come to the judgment upon Adam. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife. So he did listen to her, but he knew better. And hast eaten from the tree from which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat from it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. And so it's because of you, actually. And so it's... And so it's because of you, or your, and so he, by his transgression, he brought some effects about. In sorrow shalt thou eat from it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth. And so it's going to sprout forth, it's going to be caused to sprout forth to thee. And thou shalt eat the herb of the field. And then, in the end, I'm going to translate it as an instrumental faith. It's going to be by the sweat, the perspiration of your nose, literally, the perspiration of your face, shalt thou eat food. And so now whenever you're out working and the sweat drips off your nose, you know why. It came from Adam. Till thou return unto the ground, the Adamah, for out from it, wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. And so this is the result of the fall. There's going to be death, and as a result of that. And there you have the account of the judgment upon Adam, the serpent Adam and Eve. Now, as we move on down to verses 23 and 24, We do have a good Trinitarian statement with Adam has become as one of us in verse 22 to know good and evil. And so, well, we'll pick up there. He says, now lest he put forth his hand and take also from the tree of life and keep on eating. And that's the idea of the eat here, not just to eat of it, but to keep on eating and live perpetually into perpetuity. He says, therefore, Jehovah Elohim sent him forth from the garden. And so the three persons of the Godhead counseled together what to do here. And therefore Jehovah Elohim sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from which he was taken, or as he was taken from there. So he drove out Adam, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden the cherubim, no S on the end, just the cherubim, and the, it says flaming sword, it's a whirling sword. So some kind of a whirling sword which turned every way to guard the way of the tree of life. And so Adam and Eve are booted out of the garden, and that's the result of the fall. But the effects of the fall do pass down on us, and one of the things that we receive is a sin nature. So who's the source of sin? Well, the source of sin, it began with Satan. It does not begin with God. God created the heavens and the earth, but he also, when he created spirit beings, he created them without sin. And so the first person to sin was a spirit being, the highest of the cherubs. He was the highest, and he had the most, the highest rank. But then he was lifted up, and he fell. And so as a result of that fall, with the creation of Adam and Eve, he now approaches Eve and by his craft works on her, and she transgressed, we're going to see. And so was Eve the source of sin then? We see that Eve was not. Now, Satan was crafty, as we pointed out in the first verse of chapter 3. And so he was very subtle. He twisted what God said, and he lied. But you know, a half-truth is still a lie. And that's what Satan did. Some of what he said was probably 80-some-odd percent true early in what he said. But as we get down in the later context, he could tell part of a truth, but then he blew the rest of it. And so he lied. And that's what he did. He twisted what God said, and it was a lie. Now, I want to just stop for a second. And if we look at it, this is where unrighteousness began. And what Eve did was unrighteous. And so we can say that Eve was unrighteous. Now, when we look at it, we don't find the word trespass used with Eve. But I am assuming that since trespass will precede a transgression and then sin, that she did give it a place in her mind, and that place in her mind would have been offensive to God. And so that's an assumption, looking at the way things, at the process of moving into sin. And now she didn't carry it over. She was not counted as one who sinned. But I would say that Eve did trespass, but what she did was unrighteous. And her partaking of the fruit, when she partook of it, she acted. And in so doing, God says she transgressed. She stepped across the line. Now we're going to see here, Adam did sin. But Adam, when he sinned, he transgressed. He sinned by transgressing when he went across the line. And with him, he knew better. Eve was deceived, and she was thoroughly deceived. And so, she didn't sin, but Adam did. And so everything, all of it with Adam. First of all, Adam, it was unrighteous with Adam. When Eve offered him the fruit and he gave it a place in his mind, we could say that he trespassed. And we're going to see that Adam trespassed. He did transgress. He stepped across the line. And in so doing, he did sin. And so he did all three things. Now, it looks like we'll have to look at it next week. But we will see that he that he was responsible for the sin. So I guess we'll have to come back to Eve and her being deceived next time. And she was deceived through Satan's craftiness, and we have a couple of statements that will clarify that for us in the New Testament. But we're going to see that with Adam, he was the one who was responsible for the entrance of sin into the human race. And the moment that he offended God, that he trespassed, we can say that he died. God said, dying thou shalt die. So the moment that he partook, I'd say when he saw that fruit and he said, yeah, okay, I'll take it. As soon as he made that thought, he fell and he died spiritually. And so he died in that spiritually at that moment. But then we find that he lived many years. And so he lived probably 800 some years later or something. He was probably, I have no idea how old he was, but we would say if he was 100 years old even, he lived a long time after that. And then he did die physically. And that was the result of his sin, we'll see. And so those are some things we'll look at next week, and we'll have to stop at this point, and we'll pick up right in the middle of my thought. So if you can remember my thought better than I can, it'll be okay. Okay, well, let's go ahead and look to the Lord. Father, we're thankful again for your word, and as we consider these things, we understand that we... As human beings, that we are born with a fallen nature and a bent to sin, and we have a sin nature, but it's passed on from Adam on down through our fathers all the way down to us, and that each one of us was born with a fallen nature, a sin nature, and we all are afflicted by that often. And but yet we're thankful that by the work of your Son and the application of that work to us by the Holy Spirit, when we understand the spiritual life, that when the Holy Spirit fills us, that we can have victory over our enemies when we understand them. And when when we are relating to our position in Christ, that we have our thinking where it ought to be, and the Holy Spirit can fill us and make up for our deficiency, that then we can have victory over this thing, the sin nature that is within us. So we're thankful for grace and for the provisions of grace, and realizing that when we do live by grace, and when we do have victory over our enemies and over the sin nature, we are grateful again that through that we can bring glory to you as we then live out the life eternal that Christ imparts to us. And we're grateful for that provision and for that potential. Amen.
Will you tell Priscilla I don't know how to answer her?
Priscilla, she doesn't know how to answer you.